shaping up to be another beautiful day, says Dr. Bill Williams. Rain by tomorrow, but let's enjoy today. Sunny and high in the 80s, right now 66 as we get rolling this hour of Mobile Mornings. Sean Sullivan, Dalton Orwig, will check in with Quinn Hillier in just 1 second. And from the text line, I asked this question at the end of last hour. What would be, you know, the governor says today things are going to open right back up. What will be the first things you want to do when things open up? Like, what will be first on your list to do? And I see a lot of people, thank you, that are on the same page as me. Haircuts, yes. I'm going to be like a line out in front of the barbershop on this. This one, open my bar back up. Okay, so that person wants to go to the bar. People want to, this person says, I want a dang haircut and to go see the Molly, and go see the Molly Ringwalds at the Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. I probably know that person, whoever that is on the text line. Matt says, I want some live music in a bar. It's been way too long since I shook my bones to some good live music. Hal says, so far, the only store on DIP to close has been the state liquor store. And didn't a bunch of the ABCs stay open anyway?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Dan says, I'm going to go down to Squid Ink. That's our buddy Panini Pete's place. And get either that hot chicken or pork chop sandwich. Then I'm going to Haberdasher and drink $100 worth of top shelf bourbon. unless the owner kicks me out beforehand. Then I'm going to stumble all my way down to O'Daly's and take car bombs until my girlfriend drags me out by the hair on my head.
That's
like
a
yard work. Man, he says, hashtag economic stimulation. This texter says, the dentist. Yeah, I got a canceled dentist appointment when this first started. I'm sure they'll be calling me to remind me of that coming up soon. So, yeah, on the text line, what'll be the first thing you're looking forward to when things get back open that you're going to go do you haven't been able to do during the stay-at-home order and the businesses being closed down in Alabama? Once again, a press conference at 11 with Governor Ivey. We'll be covering it in depth at noon on Midday Mobile. All right, time to check in with the man behind QuinnHillier.com. Also, read his work and the Washington Examiner and his trilogy, the Matt Jones trilogy, available right now over at Amazon.com. Did I get that right?
Yes, indeed. Thanks a lot, Sean.
All right. Good to have you on. And something that is one of these stories other than the coronavirus stories going on out there, and your headline here over at the Washington Examiner, age and sex could undercut Joe Biden and give a long shot a sudden chance. Do tell.
Well, this came from a local history professor who asked to remain nameless, said yesterday, you know, he has a theory that there really is a chance that Biden might not actually make it to the starting gate. And the more I thought about it, the more I thought it is plausible. I don't think it's likely. I think the odds are slim, but they are not negligible. They are real. And that's because you've got, first of all, this sexual assault story against him, and I have been not inclined to believe it because it does not comport with everything that I've known and seen about Joe Biden 47 years, but they keep getting more and more collaboration, which we can talk about, and it could be that enough realistic questions are raised along these lines that the Democrats panic and get rid of him. And then, of course, you've got his age, and he's 77 years old. He has survived a brain aneurysm, and while I don't think it's fair for people to say that he has dementia, that has a very real and precise meaning, and I don't think that's fair. It is fair to say that sometimes as people get old, they get less sharp, even without having dementia. They get less sharp. They get less mentally agile. And they could start really worrying about how well he presents himself. And you combine those two factors, and you could see a move to dump him from the ticket, even as late as at the convention. And it is that sort of thing, although it's been a long time, it has happened before. And so I raised the possibility and talked about, well, what happens then?
Yeah, well, before we get into that, because I do want to talk about it, but y'all, I'm going to play maestro here for a second, and in my orchestra pit, I have Dalton Orwig and Quinn Hillier. So, for the first note here, Dalton, can you read the headline you read to me there during the news break?
Yeah, so I found this very interesting this morning, just trying to read up on the latest news. And we know that the Washington Post just excoriated Justice Brett Kavanaugh before he was confirmed, when he went through that entire, trial, if you want to call it that. And with all these new allegations surrounding Joe Biden from this one woman, Tara Reid, and what seems to be lining up, you know, you had a woman who lived at her apartment complex that said she was also told by Tara Reid that she was sexually assaulted by Biden in the early 90s when he was a senator, and also a call from her mother to the Larry King Live show back in the early 90s. Her name wasn't used, but she discussed her daughter being fired for something along the lines of what Tara Reid is saying. But from the Washington Post this morning, here's the headline. Trump allies highlight new claims regarding allegations against Biden. That's followed by a trigger warning that says this article contains information and details about alleged sexual assault and or violence, which may be upsetting to some readers. But, Quinn, I find it striking that with as many darts as the Washington Post threw towards Brett Kavanaugh last year, that their headline for this is not that there are new allegations about Joe Biden, but that Trump allies are highlighting these new claims.
The establishment media double standards on this are so beyond anything that that can even be mentioned in the same breath as the word ethics. It blows my mind. I mean, every single thing that they could find and throw out there about Brett Kavanaugh, no matter how poorly sourced, they did. I mean, the basic allegation was something that he did, as supposedly did, as a teenager, that did not actually involve any actual sexual violation, and that had not a single contemporaneous witness, and the contemporaneous witnesses that were named literally all denied ever having even been at a party like that one described, much less knowing about that supposed incident. You compare that to what's here now with multiple people saying, including one, the mother, contemporaneously saying that this happened, and the Post has not reported on it for a month, and finally they report on it, and they say Trump allies spread story, basically. This is the typical thing where if there's something bad about Republicans, or even allegedly bad about Republicans, the media headlines are Republicans bad. If there's something bad reported about Democrats, the headlines are Republicans pounce on news that Democrats did something bad. It's always Republicans are the ones that are being the meanies. Even if the bad thing is proved that the Democrats did, what makes the headlines is not the Democrats' bad action. It's that Republicans are pouncing on it, or Republicans punch at Democrats for doing something bad. So even in the headlines, they make the Republican the bad guy.
Yeah, they hamstring.
It is disgusting. It is a double standard. It is hypocrisy to the nth degree, and I'm sick of it.
Yeah, they hamstring the headline for sure when they do that. All right, a couple more minutes for the break. So I just want to and then we'll get into the who it might be. But the how does this work? How do you going into the convention? You have the person with the most number of delegates here, and you're going to take the nomination away from them. How does that work?
Well, the Democrats have very complicated rules, and I'm not even sure that I know the latest rules on when the delegates are bound, meaning by law they have to vote for the person they're pledged to, et cetera, et cetera. But basically, they could force, they could ask Biden to step aside and put all sorts of pressure on him to do it. Or they could also note that because they have delayed so many primaries, technically Biden has not yet actually won enough delegates to get a majority. So they could say, well, because of the coronavirus, we are reopening qualifying in all these states that haven't had primaries yet, and other people could enter and deny him an outright majority anyway. There are all sorts of ways they could do it, but again, back in 1972, they had actually nominated a vice presidential nominee who it then was found had had electroshock therapy for depression, which at the time seemed really, really weird. And so they, you know, after he had already been the nominee, they pulled him off the ticket. That was Eagleton of Missouri. So this sort of thing has happened before in the last 50 years.
All right. Well, let's do this. Let's run to the. Can you hold on during the news break?
Sure.
Okay, we'll come back with more of what had happened, and then any guesses on who might be the stalking horse in this. Continue our conversation with Quinn Hillier, author of the Mad Jones trilogy, host over at QuinnHillier.com, and we'll be right back. Thank you, Kane. 822 FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Right back to our discussion with Quinn Hillier. And will it be Joe Biden as a nominee? Will it be Joe Biden in the general against President Trump, or could it be someone else? And Quinn, you're talking about the process of how they would move Joe Biden out, whether they do it just by a suggestion or they do it by some other method. And then, of course, that leads us to the next question. Well, then who, if not Joe Biden?
Well, then who? And my thesis is this gives at least an outside chance to some of the lesser-known Democrats, people who are well-known to Democratic activists but maybe not so well-known to the public, but who have made a lot of friends among Democratic activists, but don't have any enemies yet. And what I mean is this: if you've already run for president recently, you probably made enemies. There are factions within the Democratic Party, and campaigns are rough and tumble. So Bernie Sanders has lots of enemies in the Democratic Party now. Hillary Clinton has lots of enemies in the Democratic Party right now. And then you've got people who thought they, you know, who it looked like they had every chance to win, like Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, and they blew it, and so they have a recent stench as losers. So they can't be unifying people if they get rid of Joe Biden. None of those four, for the reasons I gave, could really unify the party. So then you start to look at second tier people who are rising stars or who have good stories that don't have enemies. So if they make the right splash at the right time in a big way, so, you know, they could excite people, sort of the way that Sarah Palin, even though I was never excited about her, that she excited huge numbers of base Republican voters for a month or so there in 2008, made a good big splash. In this case, you need somebody who wouldn't then fall apart. But so what I'm saying is look for these second-tier people. Governor Tom Wolf of Pennsylvania, that's a key state. If you win Pennsylvania and you're a Democrat and you win all the other Democratic states, you're right on the verge of winning the presidency. People like that could, if they play their cards right, make a big splash, you know, have a speech or something like that that grows out of their own experience. It doesn't look like a brazen bid for attention, but at the same time actually is a brazen bid for attention. They could come out of the woodwork and be the nominee.
Quinn, we could talk about maybe the Oprahs and the Michelle Obamas, but I think what you hit there, governors right now are in the news with states reopening or shuttering their economies. And I'm wondering, let me throw you out a few different names here. One, Governor Cuomo, who's probably had the most FaceTime, most airtime throughout this entire thing behind President Trump. And then Governor Gavin Newsom, and one that I think might be popular with Democrats, Governor of Colorado, Jared Polis. And in that state, you've got lots of red and lots of blue. He's an openly gay man, which seems to fit what a lot of Democrats wanted in their candidate. What do you think about some of those names?
Cuomo is the star of the moment right now, but I've got a moderate friend in New York who points out if people actually look at Cuomo's record of how he has handled this, not his words, not his press conference, but the record, it's going to start getting torn apart because he did a lot of things wrong. Plus, of course, Cuomo's in general tend to be divisive. he's got a chance. But I would look at some of these others. Gavin Newsom really has handled everything quite well in California. The problem is that Democrats are going to win California anyway. They might be looking for a swing state like a Colorado or a Pennsylvania. I don't know much about Polis. The other flavor of the moment is Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, but I think she has overplayed her hand and been too overtly political, and I don't think that, that if they get to July or August, I don't think she's going to look as good. But somebody like Polis, from a swing state, somebody like Wolf from a swing state, somebody like Mitch Landrieu, former mayor of New Orleans and lieutenant governor of Louisiana, he could, I explain why he could come out of the woodwork. So you do need to look away from Washington in a lot of cases. There's a governor, even a tiny state like Rhode Island, Governor Raimondo, Gina Raimondo, is actually a very impressive person, and she's young. She's only 48 or 49, but she's already in her second term as governor, and she's got a very impressive record. So those are the ranks that I'm talking about, those mid-level, lesser-known, but not non-entities.
So how do they fund, if it's one of those people, how do they fund the campaign? Is it just DNC money that comes in that's sitting there, or do you think there's still money on the sides that that would come in to support the not Biden candidate?
There's a lot of ways to switch over money. The Biden campaign could basically ask all the donors and say, look, I've got health problems and I've got to sit out. So I'm going to send you back your contribution, but I'm going to give you an option. May I send it over to the actual nominee instead and just transfer it? And, there are ways to move money around, and I'm sure the Democrats would find it.
Okay, so this is, when would you, if this is going to happen, is it all dependent on how many more news stories that come out about Joe Biden and the sexual allegations, or is it anything? I mean, are you watching a timeline? Do you think there's a benchmark that if by this date this hadn't happened, then it's going to be somebody else?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm not predicting this. I don't think Biden is going to be jettisoned from the ticket, but if it does, and again, there is a real chance that it could. The timeline, I would think, would be you would start seeing a real move in early summer. I mean, you turn into basically any time after Memorial Day weekend. You get to about June 1st or something like that, and Democrats might be starting to panic. So that's when I would start to see movement if something like this were to happen.
All right, Quinn, and remind folks, too, if they want to read this, of course, Washington Examiner, but you also put these stories up where we can get them at quinnhillier.com.
Yeah, at quinnhillier.com, and they're updated about once a week, and you can subscribe for free very easily in the upper right-hand corner, so please go and do that. And meanwhile, if you go to Quinn Hillier and Washington Examiner right now, there's a glitch, and you get to page 13, but if you just click on my name under any of those columns, it'll then get you to page one. And my most recent piece is a tribute to my dad, who died 10 years ago today. But you might find that good. I hope you do.
All right. I appreciate that. And I will read that, Quinn, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Coming right back. Take your calls and text here on what Quinn had to say, and a couple other stories here about reopening the state of Alabama, timeline, all those kind of good things when we return. Phone number, text line is 343-0106.
Next, Kane, 835 on FM Talk 106.5 in Mobile Mornings. Let's head on over to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Good morning.
just a few days left in April. I want to know what kind of deals can we get to McConnell. I know we have to act fast.
Yeah, we're gonna we'll try to do a new car blowout this week. We got 25% off on Encores, 20% off on Envisions, 17% off Enclaves, 20% off Terrains, and 20% off Acadia. Those are all 2020, and we're trying to get rid of a few of them this week and make a month out of this. I know it's been kind of tough, but we appreciate everybody's been coming by here. You know, we're trying to keep everything clean. I'm here trying to buy some cars down in Orlando right now, so we got all the cars we bought last weekend. We got them GM certified out front. Gives you an extra 12-12 on the factory warranty. Also takes that powertrain up to 100,000. So come check it out online at McConnellAutomotive.com or give us a call at 251-476-4141.
That's awesome. Some unreal deals that you got to jump on now. We appreciate it, Louie.
That's correct. Thank you.
That's Louie Arata. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and online, McConnellAutomotive.com.
Right. A couple questions here about the presser today. That is at 11. We're going to cover it at noon today on Midday Mobile.
Do you have a prediction?
Yes, that she will be opened back up by April 30th will be the last day of the stay-at-home order. She will not extend it.
Mm.
Yeah, there's one of the things that Governor Ivey can do is it's proactive by doing nothing. In other words, she can let the current order, right, stay-at-home order, just expire.
Mm-hmm.
And say, and she'll say, you know, we'll hear today the appreciation for the great work of the people of Alabama and staying home. And because of that, we've gotten to a point where we can open businesses back up in a measured and approach, and we'll hear all that. And then what it'll mean is that as of April 30th, the stay-at-home order will be over. Then I don't know if she'll go into talking detail on the phased reopening, like was pointed out by the Lieutenant Governor's commission that put out that 157-page document about how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not just saying, it's not just like checkered flags, everybody go, but it's like these kind of businesses open first, and then a couple weeks later, these can open and those things. And I think the beaches will be, just going out on a limb here, I think she'll let the beach closure expire as well. So by this weekend, beaches will be open.
See, that's what I'm worried about. I'm worried. I hope that she reopens businesses. I'm worried that with some of the flack that these other states are catching for having their beaches open, even though it appears that that's one of the safest things you can do as long as you're socially distancing yourself, I'm worried that she won't reopen the beaches immediately. And I'm also wondering what capacity she will allow stores to hold. In Georgia, they're opening restaurants and some other businesses and allowing, I think, 50% capacity,
mm-hmm.
while in Texas, that number's down to 20 or 25% capacity. So for me, it'll be interesting. Hopefully, she'll reopen businesses later this week, but I wonder what the capacity she'll allow will be.
You know, here's the problem on the restaurant side. Now, I can only imagine that if you owned a restaurant, you're just anxious to get the doors back open and get some kind of cash flow, keep some people, you know, working. But restaurants, I'm sure there's an exception, but the ones I've been around, things I've read, run on a very narrow margin. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they're working on this narrow margin, and now you're going to take them to, let's say it's 50%. It's not 20 or 10 or 25%. You're 50%. So that restaurant, whose costs are probably, some of the fixed costs are still the same. Now, obviously, the food costs could be pared back if you're not serving as much, and the number of folks working in the restaurant, you wouldn't have as many. But you still have rent and power and these kind of things. And so if they're working on a very narrow margin, now we're cutting their capacity to 50%, and that's assuming that you would have 50% of people show up to use that restaurant. Will it? I'm not trying to disincentivize. I want to see things back open, but will those restaurants go, yeah, you know, it's still not right. I'd rather just wait a little bit longer until it's 100%. Maybe it's not worth them opening up at 50%. Maybe it is. I think it's probably a question by individual restaurant, and that may be true. That nuance may be true from business to business out there. So, but that's my prediction. I think she'll let the current stay-at-home order expire, and I think we will see beaches open this weekend.
Yeah.
I rarely get out on a limb and do that stuff because I don't know that it's of much value, but everybody likes to score points, so there you go.
We'll find out
at 11 if I'm all wet on that or not. Let's go to the phones, and Gerald in Baldwin County, first up. Hey, Gerald.
Well, I mean, I was going to comment on Governor Ivey's decision to reopen the state. I mean, I was the nuclear biological chemist. I had a couple of MOSs. I retired out of the Army.
Oh, absolutely. You've called us before about doing the doing the cleaning, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, the decontamination part, I mean, as far as the virus itself, I mean, I think they need to ease in to opening, because if you get back out there and it's still there, the second wave is going to be even worse, like I said before. But we don't really know what it can do. We don't know how long it can purposes. I mean, they're guessing.
Sure.
When it comes to the life expectancy of this COVID-19 on certain objects. But what we did, what I'm failing to understand is, you know, if you go back in history, in 1950, in the 50s, President John F. Kennedy, he created a nuclear deterrent within the United States. What he did is National Guard, Army Reserve, Navy Reserve, Air Force, Marines, they had what was called decontamination units in every state within the United States. If the United States came up under a nuclear, a biological, or chemical attack, the president would put the United States in decon statuses, which I think we had 4 decon statuses, to where you would decon all the United States within a certain period of time if we come under a nuclear attack. What I'm having a hard time dealing with, I've got a science degree, so I'm trying to figure out why we paid $1 million. I think it was estimated $1 million a day that the taxpayers paid for this nuclear deterrence, but we didn't use it.
Yeah, but bring that back to getting Alabama's economy open and back up. You would have a decontamination units go through the states to clean out the virus.
Yeah. What you would do is the way it was set up is that every state had decontamination units. Some states had more than others, kind of like taxes, like voting. Some states have more people than others, so you can have more decontamination units in certain states. So what would happen is when the president enacted the decon, every state would start deconning. Whatever state got finished first, they would take their decon units and go to other states. And then as they kept completing the decontamination process, you would end up with like multiple decontamination units finishing out the one states that needed
right,
it.
Right, working with the other states. So
you work together. But
so you're thinking maybe we need to have that come back in the form of a virus decon teams for each state.
It's possible, yeah.
There we go. Well, Gerald, I appreciate it. Appreciate the call. It's something to be thinking about going forward, although what will the next epidemic, pandemic look like? I don't know. I guess decontamination is going to be an issue, you know, no matter what you're doing. All right, Michael in Baldwin County up next. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
Doing all right, man.
Like I tried to call the 1-800 hotline because last few days I felt really just achy, just to the point where I don't get sick. I don't ever get sick. I take a flu shot. Well, I've had a headache. Well, they don't want to see me. They don't want to test me unless I have a fever. And
yeah,
I was like, what if I'm one of the ones that's walking around here that's feeling like crap and then can infect somebody else? I think the testing system is flawed right now.
Sure.
I don't like it, how they're doing that. Because if somebody is a healthy, strong 47-year-old like me that gets a flu shot once a year, that don't never get sick, and I felt crap-like for the last, since Sunday, something's wrong internally with my body, and I know it because I just, and I mean, I'm still working.
But you can
I drive a delivery truck, but I'm by myself too, you know. But
you can get a private test, and you could do that. And Dalton, do we know on the public testing side? I know if you call, they're going to say there's certain things they're checking off on the list. But I know on the public or the private side, you can go ahead and get that test.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly what number to call for private testing, and it sounds like
there's a bunch of different places.
Yeah, there are. Did you say you called the 1-800 COVID-19 hotline?
They give you like the Baldwin County area.
Mm-hmm.
I think being that the closest one for me would have been Fairhope. But
yeah,
this is weird. How I mean, hey, maybe I'll it probably ain't much of nothing, but I just, how many other people out there in this country is like me that feels like crap but they can't get in to get tested? You know, and I ain't got really the extra money to go get tested, honestly, you know, with bills and stuff, but
Let's see if more come online for folks like you. I don't know if it can help you in the short term, but, you know, the president talking about the increase in number of tests to be offered in the United States, that's something that I think helps all of us getting that information.
Yeah, and I experienced the same thing when I called. They said, unless you're feeling bad, you don't need to come in for a test, even though, you know, had contact with someone who had coronavirus. You can go in and see a doctor, but then if you don't have it, you're putting yourself in a position
where
you
somebody else might have it. Well, but that could be true of anywhere these days, right? Michael, thank you for your call. We're coming right back. Hey, thank you, Kane. 852 FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings. Our 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question. Tie ball game. Should Governor Ivey reopen Alabama before April 30th? Well, we'll find out at 11 o'clock today. And a quick reminder, too, my buddy Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK been open this whole time. They'll be open whenever the state opens up fully as well, because they're open now, getting junk gone at your home. It could be something outside the home, too. And that's a lot of times people think, okay, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, they picture boxes and bags and stuff coming out of houses. And they do that. But big stuff like swing sets and above-ground pools and storage sheds and moving everything out of a storage unit. I mean, they can handle all that. It's really easy, too, to make that appointment. You go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Make an appointment on a specific day, a specific time. They come out. They can they do the social distancing. They have the mask. They have the gloves, the whole nine yards. And you can just point at the stuff you want to have gone. They'll quote you a price. If you say yes, boom, it's gone. It's like magic. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Friend of mine, Trey, he's a local franchisee, 12 years for Mobile Baldwin County. The folks we trust here at FM Talk 106.5 and at the Sullivan House, that's Trey and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. All right, to the phones, and let's go to Frank in Gulf Shores up first. Hey, Frank.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Mike, I think Michael is his name, that he said he wanted to get tested. My wife, she doesn't have all the symptoms, but she did an online doctor consultation, and he sent her an email to have this COVID-19 test, and she got that, and she faxed it to the Robertsdale testing facility, and that's how she got her test done. And Michael was saying that he don't have the money. I can understand. I'm the same way. We didn't have the money. But she got tested, and we're actually waiting on the results to come back either today or tomorrow. So,
okay,
there's an answer for him.
Very good. Frank, I appreciate that information. Hope he is listening, and there you go. Folks helping out each other. Thank you.
Yes, sir. No problem.
All right. And one of the things, and Skip says it on the text line, and Skip, this is what I've been saying for a long time. I don't want to say don't get tested, but at the same time, be realistic. Because Skip, what Skip says here is, I'm not sure I understand the importance of testing since you'd be negative one day and positive the next. Right, but maybe for peace of mind, or Skip, or people that might have been exposed or trying to figure out if they need to quarantine. But I follow you, Skip. I've said the same thing, that I think it might give people a false sense of security. Oh, I've been tested. I don't have it. And then they go out and act a fool. You know, if you get tested and you don't have it, and then you quarantine and do the other things, then there's some peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact is, yeah, just testing you on one day is no sort of armor going forward.
But the benefit is, and you know, if they had enough tests to test everyone, if you found out that you were positive and did not think you had the symptoms or did not have the symptoms, then you would know you could at least self-quarantine and avoid infecting however many other people that you know. But we just don't have that number of tests available now. I know they're saying that once we have enough tests, and I don't even know how this would be possible, but if businesses would be able to test every employee, and I really don't think this is possible, but test every employee after the workday,
mm-hmm.
and have the test available come the next time they come in to work, and you'll know whether or not they should come in or not. I just, right now, when we've got right around 1% of the population in Alabama tested after 2 months of this, I don't see how we could possibly ever have enough tests to test every employee in America daily. It seems impossible right now.
One thing I want to point out, too, is we kind of just follow through this in fact and not by like a political punditry that gets done. We talk about, we're obviously all in on getting the state back open for business. We're a small business. We do business with small businesses. We get it. We're a big proponent. Heck, we got Cam Martian show comes up at 1 o'clock today. What's Working special edition to talk just about small business in this. At the same time, the health implications are real. You know, I know it firsthand. Obviously, you know the tragedy that has hit us here at FM Talk 106.5. But at the same time, I'm looking at texts from people. This texter says, he's 39. He said, I'm type A blood. And that whole blood thing is a whole other. We talked about it for a while. We need to circle back around mm-hmm. that. So many, like every day, there's new roads of the story. But he said, I got real sick 4 weeks ago. No way an old person can survive what I went through, the diarrhea, dehydration, the mucus I was coughing up. No way a weak person would survive. I'm 39, work outside. I'm strong and healthy, and it knocked me to the ground for 9 days. I couldn't keep my eyes open. I was so exhausted and couldn't breathe. It's for real. It's ugly. Some people do survive, but it's a damn fight. He said, nobody in my house got symptoms like me. They all have different blood type. Why didn't anybody talk about that? Well, we have on the blood thing, but I don't know if we have any final word mm-hmm. on the blood type. But, you know, that's happened even with the blood types not being an issue, that it just affects different people. Some people get hit like a freight train by it, and some people are asymptomatic, and some people are feel like they have the flu. There's so much we're going to learn going forward, how it affects different people. And that's one thing about the test and the antibody test is interesting to me, is to find out the people that did have it because they had the antibodies in their system, but they never really felt sick.
Yeah,
and
never
then
had any idea.
Then the person next to them could get the same, pick up the virus from the same place and get hit by that freight train. So we'll talk about this some more. We come back at noon today. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next. Remember, we're online at fmtalk1065.com. Also, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And TikTok.
Yeah, I'm still working on making an account.
Okay, good.
TikTok.
It's taken us a year, and it'll probably take us another couple years.